Winburn to Sarver, State College to Waynesburg, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, Pennsylvania's lawsuit abuse crisis continues to hurt our economy. This week, our Capital Watch crew places a special focus on how lawsuit abuse impacts our trucking and transportation industries. And the legislative battle over funding for public transportation agencies has its roots in the fact Democrats in Pennsylvania have become an almost exclusively urban party. I'll have a town hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capital Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. State Treasurer Stacey Garrity has been in the race for the Republican gubernatorial nomination for less than 2 weeks, but has already shown some momentum in her bid to become the GOP standard bearer. She unanimously won a straw poll conducted at a meeting of the Central Caucus of the Republican State Committee. Each of the party's six caucuses holds straw polls leading up to a planned endorsement meeting in late September. Garrity also received endorsements this past week from top Republican leaders in both the state House and the state Senate. State Senator Doug Mastriano, who was the 2022 Republican nominee for governor, has also hinted at a potential bid, but he has stopped short of announcing a candidacy. The winner of the GOP nod will take on incumbent Governor Josh Shapiro next November. More legal troubles for the Shapiro administration. Spotlight PA is reporting that a staffer in the Department of Aging is claiming he has been retaliated against for being a whistleblower. The staffer, Richard Llewellyn, is claiming that department brass thwarted his efforts to assist investigations by outside agencies into his claims that the department has suppressed or manipulated data relative to what he claims are the state's failures to protect older adults from abuse and neglect. The chairman of the Pennsylvania State Democrat Party is stepping down. State Senator Sharif Street says he will leave his party post to concentrate on a bid for Congress. Street is running in an open congressional district in heavily Democratic Philadelphia, meaning the primary is essentially the election. He will face multiple challenges for the nomination. A group of SEPTA riders are suing the transportation agency over service cuts. SEPTA, which services Philadelphia and surrounding counties, has cut service in a bid to force lawmakers to provide them with more funding. This while the agency is sitting on over $400 million in reserve funds. The attorney for the riders claims in the suit that SEPTA is, quote, committing a fraud on the public. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Lawsuit abuse continues to take a huge financial toll on our state's economy. That is especially true in the trucking and transportation industries. Our Capital Watch crew is here to talk about it. David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association and Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association are joined by Doug Marcello from the law firm Saxton and Stump. David?
And welcome once again to Capital Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, my pal Rebecca Euler, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association. Rebecca, great to be with you.
Great to be back with you, David. Thank you.
And our pal Steve Bloom is not here this week. He's on assignment. We look forward to seeing him next time around. But Rebecca, you're our logistics lady, and that the trucking industry makes Pennsylvania run. It's the circulatory system of our economy. And
yes.
So things that have a negative impact on trucking have a negative impact on
everything.
Our economy and our whole quality of life.
Absolutely. There are over 70,000 trucking companies in Pennsylvania, and most of them are small, locally owned businesses. So anything that affects the trucking industry is going to affect, like you said, everything, every community. So that's why I'm so excited today to have our guest, who is Doug Marcello, who is a transportation and trucking attorney with Saxton and Stump. a local law firm here, but Doug actually does a lot of traveling all around the country, talking to audiences and speaking, representing clients on trucking issues. So we have Doug with us today.
Outstanding. Doug, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Honored to be here. Thanks, David. Thank you, Rebecca.
Like I said, I'm very excited to have Doug. He is very well known in the industry, and we wanted to have Doug talk with us today because we do a lot of talking here on the show about the climate for business in Pennsylvania.
Yep. Competitiveness.
Right. And having to do with a lot of things, taxes, our state government and spending. But one of the most important things for having a friendly business climate is to have a jurisdiction that is friendly for legal process. Right.
Right. A judicial system that's balanced, not that's skewed towards the lawsuit industry.
Exactly. And unfortunately, we here in Pennsylvania are not lucky enough to have one of those jurisdictions. We are, in fact, the top jurisdiction in the nation for lawsuit abuse. So I know Doug can talk quite a bit about that, and I want to turn it over to him and ask him to talk to us about how that affects business in Pennsylvania and especially the trucking industry. So what is your take on that, Doug? We're really embarrassed here in Pennsylvania to be number one in the nation, but here we are.
The Eagles are the number one football team. We take that with pride, except for you Steeler fans, Rebecca.
Here we go.
The rest of us are looking at, you know, Philadelphia as being the most difficult place to have a lawsuit or to be sued. But what we've got now in Pennsylvania is the United States Supreme Court decision a few years ago, unlike prior ones that said you had to be sued either where the accident happened or the business's headquarters was, said Pennsylvania's law, which says if you have registered to do business in Pennsylvania, subjects you to jurisdiction in Pennsylvania. And then the double whammy on that came from our Pennsylvania Supreme Court that interpreted our rules of where suits can be filed in the Commonwealth. And the rule says, well, wherever you do significant business, and it did an interpretation of a business that did minimal would be probably overstating what they did, minuscule in Philadelphia. The Pennsylvania Supreme Court said that's enough. You combine the two together, and what you have is just about any lawsuit can be brought, number one, in Pennsylvania, if you do business in Pennsylvania, and number two, in Philadelphia, if there is even the most minute connection to Philadelphia. And that's where this all comes together, this conflagration. And as one of the plaintiff attorneys in Philadelphia calls it, City Hall down there where the courts are, that magical place. Because we see verdicts coming out of there that you can't imagine in many other parts of the country, let alone the rest of the Commonwealth.
And again, just Doug, whenever we're engaging the litigation industry in these kinds of discussions back and forth, absolutely everybody needs to have access to the courts to vindicate their rights, to uphold contracts, all of those things. But we need a system that is balanced, and that when the system is skewed one way or the other, like that is, it's unhealthy. And the way things are now, your point is well made. Philadelphia, Pennsylvania may be America's lawsuit abuse capital. And that when you have cases being directed to the most permissive jurisdiction, regardless of the appropriateness of that particular jurisdiction, like that's a key sign that something is wrong.
Yeah, something's askew. And you know, the impact that it has, not just on the litigants and those being sued, but all of us throughout the Commonwealth. There's been a couple studies. The Perriman Group did a study of the cost of litigation of torts throughout the country and excessive torts. They found that their allocation of Pennsylvania is that it impacts about $1,700 per person in terms of gross domestic product. That tort litigation accounts for about 2% of our Commonwealth domestic product. Then you add to that, the Chamber of Commerce did a study, and they found that what they called the tort tax, the lawsuit cost per household in Pennsylvania, was about $3,700. Now, if you go up to the Hill, and you folks know better than I, but if any politician would up on the Hill say, look, I'm going to give every household $3,700 next year, I think they'd be pretty popular, and they'd vote on that in a heartbeat. Yet that's what the Chamber of Commerce, United States Chamber of Commerce, calculates it cost every household in our Commonwealth.
All these things are cumulative. And when you look at Harrisburg, spending money faster than people can earn it, when you have high business tax rates and complex tax rules, making tax compliance more expensive, when you have regulatory overkill, that when you add in lawsuit abuse on top of that, that's just one more layer of burden to slow things down, and one more reason for people to invest and hire and locate and operate someplace else.
I think we all agree that the folks that are wrongly injured and suffer should get their fair compensation. No one's trying to take that from. But it's a system where there is excess, where there are cases that are not those for which the individuals deserve such large rewards. Those are the ones in which we have the problem with.
You mentioned fair compensation, and the fact that we're talking about Philadelphia, I think it's jury awards that are really skewed out of their proper place in Philadelphia, right? Maybe you can talk a little bit about why that is. There's an emotional response that trial attorneys try to get out of jurors in a situation like this, and there's actually a tactic that they use to do it. So maybe you can talk about that, how they do it, and how the billboards that we see along the roads play into that.
Yeah, it's a compounding effect. Nationally, it's been calculated that the trial lawyers, the billboard folks, have spent more than $2 billion with a B dollars in advertising around the country. Those then created, many of those create a kind of a lottery casino mentality. I call it the casinofication of litigation. And what it is if you look at some of these ads on television or these billboards and you kind of squint a little bit, you can't tell if they're advertising an attorney or a casino on these. What the plaintiff attorneys try to do, as you said on that, Rebecca, is it's rarely about the accident, you know, because everybody understands we can have an accident. What they're trying to make it is a systemic failure by, in our case, the trucking company, but otherwise, David, the businesses and industries, trying to make it a systemic failure, convince the jury that there's only one way, not just to address this suit, but to protect the community, that is their role here, and to do that by hitting this company, these folks, with a large verdict as it goes off on that. And that's where they're looking to try to do that, and with the power that they have on it. Then what we have is just take some of those verdicts, but then it skews the market, because Sedgwick just issued a recent study that said about 98.5% of the cases that they had never see trial. But what we have is the threat and potential of any case in Philadelphia being off the charts results in what is not spoken about, and that's the nuclear settlements. Settlements that are disproportionate with a false market based on a settlement value or potential risk as opposed to what the true value is for fair compensation.
Right, which is another way of saying it turns into a shakedown.
And it's exactly. It is one of those things that we have too many times, that the amount of the settlement is based upon the worst-case scenario on it. What they have found, the same Sedgwick study found, and again, I understand the downside risk, but it was well above 50%. I think it was in the 60%, 70%, where the defendants actually, in a verdict, ended up paying less than what their last offer to the plaintiffs were. Only about 22% did the plaintiffs exceed what the last offer from the defendants were. But because of the fear, people don't take it to trial.
It sounds like you're thinking about how these juries, and in often cases these are settlements that come about, they're almost like punishing the company, right? Wanting to punish the company for, like you said, systemic failures. When you punish a company, you're also punishing the employees who work for that company. So when we think about in the trucking industry, one out of every 15 jobs in the state is a trucking industry job. And you referenced some of those studies. I also remember reading that 171,000 jobs are lost annually in Pennsylvania due to litigation impact. So we're talking real impact on real companies, real jobs, and real people here. And that's something I don't think that is considered in this sort of litigation casino, like you said. But it has real impacts.
I had a company just a couple weeks ago, former client of mine, down in Florida, 450 trucks. And between the current economy and what their CEO or partner described as just the frequency of what he called bogus lawsuits, they said, forget it, we're closing the doors. And these are the folks who get up every day and do the job. As you said, David, they are the circulatory system of the nation. They create the jobs, and they support the community. And these are the folks who are punished and ultimately put out of business by what we're seeing in this litigious society.
You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor, from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me, Rebecca Euler from Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association, and our special guest, attorney Doug Marcello from Saxon & Stump.
The other thing I like to bring up when we talk about this is overall accidents in the trucking industry per vehicle mile travel have gone down over the past 20 or 30 years or so per mile traveled. We every year spend about $14 billion on safety equipment and devices and training in the industry, yet the cost of litigation and the cost of insurance continues to go up and up and up. Do you see anything that could potentially change this trajectory, Doug?
We have a presentation in the works based upon some articles based upon the thesis, Rebecca, that given the opportunity, we may be able to, if we are open to it and get aggressive on it, harness AI to flip the script on this. Both before the accident, utilize the data capabilities and analysis that we have, both on a micro basis, what is it that we can look at in individual drivers to reduce the propensity for an accident of that driver? Macro level, what are the most dangerous roads for these companies to travel, time of day, other items on that? And then after the accident, in litigation. Because what we have now is the plaintiffs will look at the accident, bring in somebody who goes around the country and is paid to testify, who will come in and say, you know what, the trucking company in this case didn't meet the standard of care, which conveniently they placed the bar just above what this trucking company did. Right now, we hire somebody on the other side, and they come in and they give an opposing subjective opinion that they did. I think if we can harness AI to show that the data and the analytics are objectively that we have met and exceeded the standard of care in our case, that we can succeed against the subjective level of these folks who go around and sell their wares to juries across the country.
That is really interesting, especially considering how Pennsylvania is investing so heavily in AI. I think we have a lot to benefit here in Pennsylvania from that industry, and to hear how it might be applied in this specific situation is kind of ironic and exciting all at the same time. So I love that.
To note the criticality of the trucking industry to business logistics and the rest of the economy, of course, you know, with manufacturers, that we need our truckers to bring the raw materials or component parts to the manufacturing facility and then to take the finished good to the wholesale and retail marketplace. And for anybody who ever buys anything in a store, It was made in a factory by manufacturing workers and delivered by a truck driven by a trucker.
And even more so now, David, we've become a last-mile economy in many sense of the word, where store has become something that younger folks are not familiar with. It's just easy to go online, and if you need shampoo, there's someone who will deliver it for free the next day, those type of things. And you know, compounding, right now, Cumberland County, the number two employer after the federal government is Amazon. And we have our logistics throughout the Commonwealth here, particularly in the crossroads that we have here in Cumberland County.
Sure.
And I think that's where it's really going to come through. You're absolutely right. The absent and punishing the transportation industry, it's all going to come to a standstill. Mm-hmm. And then think about it. You add this tort logistic tax to those who provide that transportation, but through the out-of-pocket expenses they have to pay in order to reduce the increase in insurance premiums, because they're not going to reduce it, but in order to slow the increase, many companies take on their own deductible retention amount, and those companies plus the increasing insurance premiums, you know, they got to go somewhere, and they're going to go on to the bill that's required, the cost is going to require to transport that freight, and it's just an added expense on it.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And like you said, it is the cost involved here is putting businesses out of business too. So especially the small businesses in the trucking industry are about 20% of the revenue, but 48% of tort costs. So it's disproportionately affecting the small guys, and they do go out of business, unfortunately, just like you said. So it's also decreasing competition, which of course also raises prices. So not only do you have price pressure from the carriers that are hauling the freight in the industry, but you're reducing the number of carriers in the industry too, thereby decreasing competition. So there's a lot of forces at play here that are increasing costs. And like we said, all these products are on a truck, many products multiple times on a truck. So the increased costs of transport are pyramiding throughout the entire supply chain. So where you have products that are on a truck during the course of transport, when they're raw materials in the factory, between factories, finished product to the store, from the store to the customer. So every time it's on a truck, the consumer is eating more of those costs. So it just compounds throughout the entire system. So it really does hurt everybody.
So, Doug, what would your top priority responses be? Like, what are the steps that we need to take in Pennsylvania to right-size that cost of lawsuit burden?
I think what we need to do is, number one, come up with jurisdictional fairness. Let's have the suit either where a party can be sued or where the accident happened. Let's limit where these actions can be brought. Number two, let's look at reforms in terms of some of the litigation that we have. Right now, the question in terms of the Fair Share Act that had stood for a number of years in a Superior Court decision has raised question and put us back to a 1%. And also have the judiciary, which is looking to call balls and strikes in terms of these cases, not skewed one way or the other,
right,
straight down the middle, because people underestimate the judicial elections and don't pay enough attention to it. The judiciary makes the rules of the game, not just interpreting the laws in the cases. So it's an across-the-board approach right there.
Well, Doug, thank you so much for being with us. Is there a place online where the listeners can find more about you and the work that you're doing?
Best way to find me is LinkedIn, Doug Marcello, those two words. You can find what I do. My family keeps track of where I am around the country that way. And also our webpage, saxtonstump.com.
Outstanding. Doug, thanks so much. And Rebecca, where can people go to learn more about the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association?
They can find us at pmta.org.
Wonderful. And as ever, you can find me online at pamanufacturers.org. And from Rebecca and me, thanks again to our friend Doug Marcello, and thanks to all of you for listening. We'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
The standoff over funding for the Southeastern Pennsylvania Regional Transit Authority, SEPTA, Pittsburgh Regional Transit, PRT, and smaller public transportation agencies across Penns Woods has its roots in the shrinking urban-centric base of the Democrat Party. Democrat state lawmakers representing rural areas are on the verge of distinction. Over the past decades, the party's base has steadily retreated into urban and, in some parts of the state, suburban areas. Following the 2020 census, the Legislative Redistricting Commission produced a set of maps gerrymandered to maximize urban-suburban representation. It worked. As a result, Democrats eked out a one-seat majority in the House of Representatives, creating both divided government and a body unrepresentative of the state's geographic divide. House Democrats have spent more time passing messaging bills than in actually legislating to move Pennsylvania forward. Although not proficient in actually accomplishing anything, legislative Democrats have excelled at performance art. Highly inflammatory rhetoric frequently rises from the House floor as lawmakers hold forth on a variety of issues designed to show the voters back home that they are working hard for them. The folks at SEPTA have taken their cue from their legislators. As bureaucracies are wont to do when they want more money, they are set to cut the services most likely to inflame the public. Hence, routes that transport schoolchildren or fans to Eagles games are first on the chopping block. They and their legislative supporters have ginned up a fake emergency over funding. Senate Republicans did pass a bill giving SEPTA level funding, while details of funding going forward remain part of the ongoing state budget deliberations. Rather than accept the stopgap measure, House Democrats immediately rejected the bill, preferring a service disruption standoff to actually negotiating a solution. Public transportation, of course, is highly concentrated in the state's urban areas. Since urban areas are almost exclusively represented by Democrats, it thus rightfully becomes an issue of top concern for lawmakers from their areas. The problem is that baked into Democrat ideology is the theory that all problems can be solved by spending more money. Thus, their solution to the SEPTA funding issue is simply more funding. Being captive of the labor unions, they refuse to look at the unsustainable number of employees and excessive contracts that are the hallmark of both SEPTA and PRT. Amid declining ridership numbers, there is no effort to consolidate or eliminate routes. State government, however, currently has a structural budget deficit. Spending is increasing at a rate higher than projected increases in income. SEPTA, of course, is not the only piglet sucking at the teat of state government. The public education cabal, free medical care, and other so-called human service costs are also rising exponentially. Taxpayers living in areas of Pennsylvania who will never set foot on a SEPTA bus or train are already subsidizing that service. Whether it is from state tax dollars or turnpike tolls, SEPTA has their hands in many pockets. Voters elsewhere are balking at pouring even more money into those systems absent significant reform. There is also the question of whether increasing funding to mass transit is the highest and best use of increasingly scarce tax dollars. That part of the state is largely represented by Republicans who control the state Senate, thus setting up the conflict of interests. SEPTA was at one time able to bridge that divide because the collar counties outside of Philadelphia were Republican bastions. Montgomery, Delaware, Chester, and Bucks counties sent Republican legislative delegations to Harrisburg. But that has changed, with Democrats now holding a voter registration advantage in all but Bucks County, which last year flipped back to the GOP. The urban legislative delegation also can no longer count on significant support from southwestern Pennsylvania, where the counties surrounding Allegheny, home to Pittsburgh, have all turned ruby red. Thus, there are few Republican senators and representatives for whom additional funding for mass transit is not only not a priority, but whose constituents are saying, enough is enough. The end result is likely to be more funding for SEPTA, PRT, and the smaller transit agencies, because the inevitable gravitational force of government is for higher spending. But whatever final deal is reached, the increase should be minimal and must include ironclad requirements for the implementation of operational efficiencies. Pennsylvania is already running full tilt toward a fiscal cliff, pouring more money into inefficient and politically corrupt mass transit agencies will only make jumping off it happen more quickly. With the Town Hall Commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 30 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WWBE-FM and WFYY-FM in Selins Grove, along with WMBS-AM and FM in Uniontown, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Frederick W. Anton III Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.